Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor The Hidden Nene.
Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we'll be catching up with Gordon Bruce. He's the former CIO, Chief Information Officer over at the City and County of Honolulu, and the author of a new book called Dragons at the Gate. Hey, Gordo, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hey, thank you, Bert. Great to be home.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, you know, being back home, you had a show here which predates Bite Marks Cafe, and you were sitting in this studio back in the day when you and Jay Fidel had ThinkTech, right?
Yeah, yep. Jay Fidel, Lori Akau, Don Mangiarelli, when we first jumped into this medley here.
Yeah, I know, and those were definitely the days, and then of course, Jay, you know, started up ThinkTech as a video production, right? And then, you know, I remember when I first got a chance to actually work with you over at the City and County back in, I think this was around 2011. And I remember you came, maybe that was the last time you came on the show, was back then. And you and Forrest Rizal were really talking about innovations at the city and county. And one of those innovations was things like Code for America.
Right. We created Code for America, which resulted in, and we just talked about that earlier, an app called Da Bus, which was around for over 10 years for people to catch the bus and know when the bus was on time and such. And it cost the city and county nothing.
Yeah. Not a dime. And, you know, that was kind of a very interesting time. It was like the intersection of civic engagement and technology. And there were opportunities to bring parties together, government and community, to come up with innovative ideas on how to perhaps solve some government problems. And remember, I think not only was the Code for America effort to build some applications, but there were some hackathons that we did.
Exactly. We did those at the Blaisdell. We did some hackathons then. We had 16 and 60, I think, were the age groups of everybody coming in and getting involved in some kind of tech event.
Well, you know, and I remember we did, since it was a city and county thing, we actually did it at, might have been Ala Moana. Anyway, it was where we got everybody together. And then one of the things that came out of the, it was called City Camp, and I remember distinctly we had a discussion around open data, and that was one where it came up as a topic, and then the question was, okay, so how do we establish some form of open data? And I think the answer was, well, we have to pass a bill. We have to put it in statute. And that came out of a City Camp.
Correct, right?
Which you were, you know, instrumental.
Yeah, think about it. You would not have been able to create Da Bus app if we couldn't get access to Da Bus data.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a lot of different things, whether it be the financial data or whatever. So we made that available under the Hanneman administration.
Yeah.
We made that data that was typically held close to the chest available to anybody and everybody in the public to do whatever they wanted with it.
Well, and you know, luckily the bus had like some geolocation data. Right, and there's a schedule. So a lot of that was brought together by a team, you know, from the city county,
right,
that actually developed the bus.
Yeah, we sat with Roger Morton and said, we want access to the bus data. And he said, well, why do you want to do that? Because sometimes we're late. Well, there's a perfect example. And I asked him, I said, well, how often you're late? Oh, we're only late about 2% of the time. Mm-hmm. We're the best in the nation. I said, why would you not want to make that data available that you're the best in the nation for being on time with the bus?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so guess what? Data got released.
Well, I remember, I fondly recall those days back in the 2011, 2012, and we actually passed that open data bill, I think, in 2013. And it was fun. you know, with you and Forrest Rizal working at the city. And
it was a blast.
Yeah. It was good. And then after that, you went and kind of kickstarted the PAXA, right?
Yeah, well, PAXA was in place, and I went under contract with them to help them grow their IT business, mm-hmm. which they did. And I was there for 3 years, and they became quite successful, and they still are today. And it was during that time I went, maybe I should work for myself for a change rather than everybody else, and went and started GJB and Associates. And that was in October of 2015. How can you forget the date? And here we are today with 23 employees.
Well, that's good. You know, describe to me a little bit about what does a CIO think once they, you know, I guess, leave that position? And in the case of the city and county, there probably was administration change, so, you know, time to move on. Would you have considered another CIO position somewhere?
I toyed around with it, but then I went and started my own firm and became a CIO for hire.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still the CIO, but I was working for other companies as their CIO for hire. So I got exposed to nonprofits and for-profit companies and all kinds of other enterprises, which helped me even grab a bigger understanding of what business was all about, which then intrigued me more.
Yeah, so, you know, when you started to be a CIO for hire, I mean, what kind of companies hired you? What were they looking for?
A fair number of nonprofits hired me because, you know, they don't have the large budgets
right.
You know, six-figure CIOs, and I would get contract with them to come in and review their current IT business plans,
mm-hmm.
lack of plans,
mm-hmm.
and put together strategic IT plans for them, security plans for them, risk management plans for them,
mm-hmm.
and then get them initiated and get them started and get them doing it in-house without having to go and spend large amounts of money. So I had very successful space in the nonprofits, but a lot of the private sector companies also recruited me to come in for 3, 6, 9 months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then was it, what was it that kind of precipitated the PAXA job? Because when you were doing CIO for hire, you were pretty much independent.
Well, PAXA was right after city and county. Right after the city and county, I went to PAXA.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
was, they recruited me. And so I went in and that's where I started there. And I got an interesting flavor and taste for business in there too, because of the fact that it was being run as a business. It was in the business of making money,
mm-hmm,
not in
mm-hmm.
the business of being an IT support group, but making revenue and generating income and creating jobs in a highly efficient field, as you know.
Well, you know, when you left PAXA and then you started to do CIO for hire and probably primarily consultative work, was this pretty much all under the umbrella of GJB?
Yes, it was under the umbrella of GJB and Associates. We did a lot of IT consulting, but we also did a lot of design work for things like electronic security systems, mm-hmm. access control, audio-video systems. So we would do a lot of the design work. We'd write a lot of the proposals, a lot of the contracts, and then we would help the client go find someone to come in and actually do that work. And now, lo and behold, we do that work.
Well, and a lot of that work also started to bring kind of Department of Defense customers, right, to your, and I do want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that, because that's kind of where I would imagine a lot of interesting sort of cyber challenges are being faced at that sort of front line. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at the short break to continue our conversation with Gordon Bruce, author of Dragons at the Gate. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're catching up with Gordon Bruce. He's the former CIO over at the city and county of Honolulu. Worked at PAXA for a while and was a CIO for hire. And his new book, Dragons at the Gate. And Gordon, you know, we were talking about, you know, CIO for hire. And then as you started to consult with a lot of companies and start to kind of address their IT needs and where they were going into the future, how did the customer base sort of migrate to some of the DoD contacts that you have?
As businesses became more online, then the hacking started.
Okay.
And then all of the different countries started getting involved in the hacking business. And that involved hacking not only private sector companies, but hacking the governments of other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there are 170 countries right now cyber attacking the United States. 170. So, and that's only happened, if you think about it, over the past maybe 10 years. Because of how much has exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And look at all the breaches that have happened when small companies were breached. And they had to pay the ransomwares with the Bitcoin and such. So that really pushed my button and got deeply involved in that side of the business versus the CIO for hire.
That side of the business can be very deep, you know, and... I'm curious, how did you start to address the immediate need? Because it's not only deep, but it's wide. There's a bunch of things that you could, you know, start to build expertise around. How did you focus?
Yeah. So I think the one that pushed my button was when the Chinese hacked a small Department of Defense contractor, two-person company, and as a result of that and some other hacking they did, they emulated one of our fighter jets in 10 years. They created this similar fighter jet as ours. And that was the one that pushed me. I went, if they can do that with that, what can they do with the rest of this? And I find out things after a while. There's 300,000 Department of Defense contractors in this country that are doing work for the federal government in spaces that require secure networks and secure infrastructure. There are 25,000 of those in Hawaii alone. Ask yourself the question, do you think they are set in such a way to protect all of that data from being hacked and taken away from us and used by our adversaries? That became my real focus.
What is the typical point of entry for any of these hackers? I'm sure there's a lot of them, right? But what kind of percolates to the top of your mind as far as how they would actually enter into the system?
How secure is your network access to the internet? Are you using some, you know, $39.95 homemade built-in firewall sitting there running your business? I mean, they're already in. Like I said in the book, they're already in. They got in already. You don't even know they're there. And they're already gathering and capturing all of your data.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you put your enterprise on the internet, that's it. And a lot of the old systems that are in place, all they did was they just tacked a button on it, tacked a server on it, tacked a network access on it. Next thing you know, you've opened up your entire infrastructure to the world.
So what you're describing are the firewalls, right, that typically a business would put that would separate their network to the internet.
Right, and what's in, you know, separate their local area network from the access to the internet and all of the things that they access on the outside, whether it be a partner company. Let's say you've got a subcontractor. Now, how secure is their network? Maybe yours is secure, but theirs isn't. Those kinds of situations exist.
Mm-hmm.
So supply chain, what about your supplier? Oh, I'm a contractor and I just ordered 1,000 widgets. Why do I need 1,000 widgets? And someone out there has already hacked that. And now they're looking at you going, they ordered 1,000 widgets. I wonder why they need 1,000 widgets. Let's go look and see what they're doing. And then next thing you know, they're in the door.
So what is it that you would then recommend for any of these clients of yours?
Well, there is situations in place now. 6 years ago, cybersecurity maturity model certification became new and introduced to Department of Defense contractors.
Mm-hmm.
It's now law. So as of November of this year, if you're a Department of Defense contractor, you have to be cybersecurity maturity model certified or not get a contract or lose an existing contract. And right now, I can tell you, nationwide, we have a very limited number of contractors of those 300,000 that are cybersecurity maturity model certified today.
Now, what you describe is of concern because if the amount of sort of these nation state threats are only increasing, and I know over the years there's always been the effort to try to get more young adults into the cybersecurity space so that they can build the expertise to work in it. But there's always been kind of the a little bit of the reluctance of the private sector to spend the money on that kind of cybersecurity expertise. And this has been going on for probably the last 10, 15 years.
True.
Has it changed in 2026?
Well, it's definitely changed in the Department of Defense space because of the requirements. You're talking hundreds of, you know, we're talking billions of dollars worth of contracts that could be not awarded because you're not compliant. There's 110 practices that you have to put into place. 320 objectives have to be met. So you to demonstrate that you are securing your infrastructure to, in order to exercise your efforts in the contract that you have with the federal government. And it doesn't matter necessarily. It doesn't have to be the Department of War. It could be with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It can be with major departments within the federal government that you're going to have to look at adopting all of these practices.
You know, what do you tell people who are very interested and concerned about potential for them to be potential subjects of any form of hack? Could be a from social engineering. It could be from phishing attacks. It could be in fact, there was a recent Time magazine article about somebody who got a text, and it's a you can actually find this article on the web. How the text asked them a question, answer yes or no, and then he responded with a no, and then right after he responded with a no, he got a call from what looked to be Apple support, and then he started to think that it was legit and provided some information, and lo and behold, identity was stolen. I mean, there's all manner of these kinds of attacks that are taking place.
All over.
I mean, another friend of mine at work, she was just telling me that she got an email. And then in the email, she thought it was coming from a legitimate person that she knew. And there was some link in there, clicked it, boom.
That's it. And AI is generating great emails, great text messages from countries that typically you knew it was an attempted hack because the English wasn't quite right, kinds of things. But now they're using AI to rewrite those messages and sound very personable or very like they know you or you might know them. And so AI now is coming into this mix.
Oh, yeah. And you know, it's only going to get worse. Now, I do want to give you a chance to talk about the book and what was it that got into the book. Because obviously you've been exposed to a multitude of different sort of hacks and entry points and devastation that might occur. How did you decide to choose what got in? And so anyway, we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back with a short break to continue our conversation with Gordon Bruce, author of Dragons at the Gate. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Chaminade University.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Gordon Bruce. He's the former CIO over at the City and County of Honolulu and the author of Dragons at the Gate. And, you know, we've been teasing about, Dragons at the Gate. And Gordon, you did a good job of kind of building up why it is that you wrote this book. Obviously, cybersecurity is top of mind. It is something that you've focused a lot of your private sector work in. What was it that really sort of inspired you to write this book? And we'll get to the point where I want to hear some of the stories that you put into the book. But what was it that kind of inspired you to really want to write this book?
The key was the IT department heads and staff were saying, we can't afford this or we can't get the money. How do I get my senior executive team to understand the realities of this and that we need to do it? So I said to myself, okay, I got to put together a short storyline they can give to their senior executives. And essentially what I did in the book, I created three sections. Section one talks about hacks. What's happened? Who's been hit? Who hit them? How they hit them? Section two talks about the CMMC requirements, the Cyber AB that was created to help DoD contractors prepare and get ready for all the CMMC compliance regulations. Mm-hmm. And the third part, what I did, which I had the most fun writing, was I took actual hacks that happened, real world hacks, but generated a storyline around it on how I thought they happened and how and who I thought happened into short little stories. You could read in like 10 to 15 minutes, even less than that. So, you know, you can give the book to your boss and say, hey, read a couple of sections in the front, hacks. These have actually happened. Oh, why don't you take a look at the back in the appendix? Here's some stories on hacks that actually happened and perceived on how they were happened. And the fact that, by the way, these individuals could be sitting inside our network right now and we just don't know it. And they've been in here for years.
Okay, so I want to ask you about, you know, a story you can tell that is part of the book, the story that you want to convey. But also, the audience for this book, primarily, if I'm hearing you correctly, are the C-level senior execs of the company that perhaps need to consider perhaps investing in this area.
Well, they're going to have to invest whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. But the key is that I think you could be a high school student and read this and find it interesting and say, oh, maybe this might be a career here. Mm-hmm. Or again, the C-suites get them to look at it and have at least have a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And then even John Q. Public, you mentioned it earlier. I get a text message and I get hacked. Well, in this book, you can see Salt Typhoon and a few of the other things that have happened. They're just everyday common people on their mobile device who have enabled someone to come in and hack into their environment.
So can you pick one or two that come to mind that is in the book that you might want to share just as sort of teasers?
Okay, teaser. I think one I'll talk about is national infrastructure, your water systems, your electrical grid, those kinds of systems. There's a couple of stories in the book about electrical systems that have been compromised. And they were compromised for years before anyone knew they were in there. How about if there's a country in your system who can adjust the chemical content of the water that comes to your house?
That would be of a concern, a great concern. Yeah.
How about if I tell you exists already today in this country? And wasn't discovered until just a little while ago. And they had been sitting in that system for years, How about the hack that shut down the oil supply on the East Coast a few years ago? And guess what? They didn't hack the pumping system for the oil system. They hacked their billing system. They couldn't bill for the oil, so they shut the supply off. So those kinds of things that you wouldn't even think would have an impact on your life, but they do.
Now, are there stories in the book about Hawaii?
There is one section. There is one section in Hawaii. I put purposely it's near the end of the book, and I'll let people who get the book read that section. And the key in that one story is the consultant who is former Navy, brings up a map that shows the country and everywhere around the country that is presently hacked with a red dot, and you can barely see the country.
So it's full of red dots.
Red dots everywhere. Red dots everywhere.
Now the book is primarily for sort of businesses to become, you know, acutely aware of what's happening, you know, in the network. What would you recommend to the general user now that is constantly being not only phishing attacks, but, you know, there's texts that come in, you know, never a day that goes by where I'm not getting a text message saying something to the effect, I haven't seen you for a while. What are you up to? And what would you recommend for just those seemingly innocuous messages that come through?
If in doubt, knock it out.
Yeah.
That's you have to be more diligent. I mean, I get them, you get them, and you go, if it's really important and it's really someone who really wants to get a hold of you, they will call you. They will not text you. They'll say, oh, you never replied to my text. Well, maybe I didn't think your text was legit, but you called me, and so how can I help you?
Well, and even when it comes to phone calls, I mean, there's a multitude of calls that you get every day, and it comes in without any caller ID, right?
Right.
And it's not in your contact list. What's your recommendation?
Don't answer it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that simple. If it's important, they will get a hold of you the right way. And just use common sense. I mean, credit card companies are not going to call you anymore like they used to because they know all these scams that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
They just cannot.
Now, what happens when you get a text message and it actually looks like it's coming from a legitimate source?
I'll go back. If in doubt, kick it out.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not that. It's not life and death. I mean, so. And you're not that important. We're not that important, right? We're important for the data, but they'll get to you if it really is important.
Well, no, that's true because as an example, I mean, I'll get a call. I don't recognize the number. I won't pick it up. But like you said, if it's important, they'll leave you a voicemail or something, right? Or they'll try to text you or do something to identify. The ones that are very suspect are the ones that, you know, ask you, hey, I haven't seen you for a while. You know, how are things going? It's like they never identify themselves. Don't respond.
That's right. Don't respond. Just dump it. I mean.
And same thing with emails, right? I mean, you look at the email and.
Don't open it.
Yeah. The first thing you do is look at what the URL or the domain name from where that user is sending. And of course, if that's suspect, don't even open
you
it.
look up that URL and you go, wait, that's all these funky letters and combinations of things and so on. No, that is not legitimate. Don't open it. Don't click on the link. Delete it. Get rid of it as fast as you possibly can.
Is there any place you would suggest people go to get some, you know, good advice?
Oh. That's a ChatGPT. I really don't know. There's so many different entities out there.
Well, I know
that can help you. I mean, the federal government has a lot of links that you can get to that can happen. If you're in the business side, I would go with the CyberAB. Go to their as a nonprofit, self-funded, federal government approved. For businesses, go look at that site. They'll give you a lot of information there.
Okay, so Gordon, where can people find Dragons at the Gate?
Dragons at the Gate can be found on Amazon. Why not Amazon? So it's published on Amazon. There are a lot of books out there called Dragons.
Okay.
Now, Dragons at the Gate, just do Dragons at the Gate, Gordon Bruce, and it will pop up there. And it's available on Kindle and available as a hard copy.
I'll put it up on our show notes for later. Gordon Bruce, former CIO over at the City and County of Honolulu and author of the brand new book, Dragons at the Gate. Hey, Gordon, I want to thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure, Bert. It was fun.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll be joined by another former CIO, Brooke Connor. And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.